This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Fay Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Fay Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Well, good morning, Fay. How are you?
I'm wonderful. You know, it's, on Saturdays, I'm always wonderful. It doesn't matter if the day's gloomy or sunny. As long as it's not snowing, I'm in pretty good shape.
Well, these days, it could snow at any moment. It may snow through June, for all I know at this point.
You know, I don't know what it's going to do. You know, this last week, we had sunny days, and then we had this cold front, and then we had... not only storm warnings, that one day we had freeze warnings.
Jeez.
They said, you know, bring your plants in. And I know a lot of people had just put out their flowers. Well, they lost those. I mean, they can do that again now.
Yeah.
And I did not realize it. When we had that bad snow in January, I thought that I had a lot of the bushes that, you know, they'd all come back out. They're not coming out. We're going to have to replace a lot of bushes.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, they looked like they were coming out, but they did not.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, it's amazing what that storm did.
I mean, geez, we're almost into May. It shouldn't be so up and down or so extreme.
It shouldn't
extreme.
Be so darn cold most of the time.
Yes. Yeah.
But now, they say tomorrow that it's going to be in the 80s.
Really?
How do you go from the other night when it was 30 and yesterday, what day was that, Wednesday morning? It was 30 degrees.
That's amazing. I can't understand how it can be so. You know, the needle should be moving towards nicer weather. Now, you know it's going to happen. And I know we say this from time to time. We talk about it being so up and down and so cold. At some point, it's going to turn 125. And it's going to be like the nightly low. And it'll stay that way for like 9 months.
Yes, but, you know, we're a long way from it.
Are we? How do we know?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I mean, I feel like we're a long way from it. Let me just say this. Let me say this about that. You know, yeah. I think we are.
It seems like it's so far down the road. It's like summer, at some point, we'll get here. We're just not sure. Summer may get here when it turns fall, but we don't know. At some point, it's going to happen. It should.
That's right. Right now, it'd be hard to even think about swimming and fishing and picnicking. I mean, all the things normal people do in the summer.
That is true. Although
I mean, it's kind of hard for me to think about it right now.
Sometimes, like in the middle of like December, I will sit around and just kind of think about picnicking and fishing and stuff like that. But, you know, it's not happening.
Yeah, everybody does. You know, we look for those spring and summer usually. You know, when we can do a lot of things, get out, and because of the virus, people want to be out because they haven't been out in so long.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, everybody wants to get out, and I think it's safe if you're at a ballpark or, you know, you're at a big park, you know, you can get a long way from people, and I think that's safe.
Yeah.
But, you know, all the places I go still require a mask, and they're like me. We're all... want to wear a mask for a little while to be sure everything's okay.
Exactly. Until we get the all clear.
Yeah, until we get an all clear, I think everybody should, and they should still distance.
Yeah.
Which I certainly am doing.
Yeah. And I'm not smart enough to know either way. I just go by what other people say, so...
There you go. Follow the crowd.
Follow the crowd. Now, I've learned the hard way that that's not always the good solution.
Well, you're right about that. Sometimes it's a bad idea.
That'll get you in trouble, but probably not in this case. Probably you're okay.
Yeah, you're probably okay.
This is... go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, things are changing so fast right now.
They really are. I remember, you know, in simpler times when we would get up on Saturday morning and it would be nothing but just, you know, cartoons and eating cereal in front of TV and that. And then, you know, like early afternoon, then you go outside and play. It seems like, you know, even Saturdays, even things that were so simple before at one point are not quite as simple anymore.
That's right. Things have changed a tremendous. I mean, you're thinking about to the June Cleaver days.
Yes, yes.
You're thinking about to the 50s and the 60s.
Oh, that would be a good time.
When it was safe and everybody just let their little kids run out up and down the street and play with each other. They could go to the park by themselves. Well, those days have changed.
Those are long gone.
Oh, that's over. I mean, you're living in a bygone deal when you think about that. You know,
I'm starting to think I'm the king of daydreamers.
That's it. You're daydreaming, and it's a long, long past. But you know,
it's a harsh reality when you come back to true times.
That's right. Well, it's like landing from the moon back down to Earth.
Right.
You know, it's different. It's not the same old world you're thinking about.
No, that's for sure.
Can you imagine if the people that have gone on, if they could come back and see us now?
Oh
my gosh.
They wouldn't even recognize it.
They would not recognize this place.
That is true.
And some of it would not be for the best. Yeah,
they would sit around probably and say, "What happened?"
That's exactly right.
We had everything figured out in the 50s and the 60s. It was wonderful.
And we left them in good shape. That's what they're going to say.
Oh,
that we left everybody in good shape to go on and have a normal life like we did, and they jumped it up. Well, they let all the boys go out in the garage, and they, you know, they start building computers. They start building rockets. Everything just went kind of fast.
Yeah, we got into technology, and all of a sudden things just exploded with technology.
That's right, and the technology has taken us so far that most people would not even recognize us now.
Now, some of the technology is fun and exciting and useful and neat, like when you were, like at Christmas time, when you were talking about like the coffee mugs that you could control your temperature from your phone. That's exciting and fun.
That is exciting.
But there is a dark side of technology on the other side, which is not always good.
What do you think that is?
I don't want to go there. I'm not smart enough.
Oh, you don't want to go there. Okay.
No.
Well, don't tell us about it. Maybe we don't need to know if it's a dark side. I don't want to hear anything dark today.
Well, we spend a lot of time in our phones, and we don't necessarily communicate with people like we used to.
That's true. And we try to make it a rule to keep the kids, you know, off their iPads and off their phones, you know, and make them go out and play. You know, used to you didn't have to say that. But nowadays you do. You have to say, okay, you need to go out and play a while.
Yeah. We need as parents and people like that need to remember when we used to say things like in or out, we're not paying to cool the neighborhood.
That's right. I remember that when they said that. Oh my gosh.
We don't say those things anymore.
And now the children go out and play on the zip line. You know, I finally got my zip line installed.
Oh, is it in?
It's installed, and they're having a ball with it. It's a fun deal. The only thing we've got to do is build some steps up to it because they were out there using our little ladders to get up to the zip line.
Are you going to put in like some steps or a platform or something like that?
Yes, we're going to put some steps up to it in two different locations. We've got two zip lines.
Oh,
so
really?
We're going to have to put steps up where they can get on. That's their whole problem. They can't get up on the seat, so we're going to have to do that to help them. Where they won't do something dangerous, like I saw them the other day out there before I stopped them. They had a folding chair. They were going to get up on the back of a folding chair to get on. I go, oh my gosh, we're going to have an accident.
You'll be in the hospital in 5 minutes.
That's what I told them. I said, you've got to stop doing this sort of thing. But yeah, we ended up with two. We had one, and it was like 160 feet. Well, we found out that we needed more support, so we put another support in the middle and created a second zip line.
Wow.
Yeah, so we did that. where it would be a lot stronger, we went and got a stronger cord, you know, for that. It just didn't support little kids that were like 100 pounds. You know, it said it would, but it just wasn't right somehow. So we got stronger equipment and put up where that it'd be safer for them.
Well, and that's what's important. Safety first, every time.
Always safety first. But I guess it's for the good because we've got two zip lines now.
See, it was a hidden
a blessing.
Exactly. Yes.
A hidden blessing. We didn't even know. I never thought I'd have a zip line in my yard.
Yeah, I'm sure. At some point, you'll have to get like the bouncy houses and the water slides. You'll have to.
Oh, we have it. We have all. We have the bounce house with two slides. Water goes up and over and everywhere else. Oh yeah, we've got all that.
So literally, you don't ever have to leave the house for anything.
No, I mean, I can keep the kids right here. I mean, our yard is a pleasure palace, really. I mean, you know. And I'll tell you what, we ordered those bounce house and the slide deal and all that big stuff from Costway. I wasn't familiar with that company, but when I went online last year and looked, they've got every kind of bounce house. Costway has a lot of good products. So I was glad to use them. And everything they said was true when you got it, you know. And then we had to have the deals to air them up, and we've got all that. I think, in fact, we may even have an extra one. But I like their products, and everything was genuinely good. We had ordered something from another company, and it wasn't worth a hoot.
See, most people order or rent those things. You just bought them.
That's right. We own ours.
You are not playing around.
We're not playing around. I mean,
and why are you not selling admission tickets for everybody to come over to Bagby Park?
Well, it keeps the little kids busy right here.
Oh, that's true.
So that's important. They don't have to go anywhere. They can have so much fun right here. And then they can ride their train. So, I mean, that's a lot of things you could do every day all summer long.
So I'm gonna mess everything up for you right now. So get ready.
Okay.
Have they asked for a mini roller coaster installed yet?
No, they haven't asked for that.
They're going to.
Surely they don't know about things like that.
Oh, they will when I'm done.
I hope not. But, you know, our little train is the little Thomas train. You know, it's blue and has a little yellow nose deal on it.
Really?
Yeah. And it has four cars, and it just chugs along.
Wow.
You get it and drive it, and it just chugs and goes along.
Wow, that sounds like a ton of fun.
It is a lot of fun. Last year, something happened to it, and we had to send it in. So we sent it into a tractor place, and I kept wondering why it wasn't coming back and why it wasn't coming. I called. They said, we're having so much fun at that train. We've all been driving it. I go, oh, no. That's why it wasn't coming home. They were driving the thing. They were having a good time with it.
So they put a few miles on the train while it was in service.
They put a few extra miles on the train.
Well, that's something you just don't talk about every day.
That's right. Well, I hadn't even thought about it. I mean, you know, but...
Wow.
That gives them something to do.
Yeah, I would say it's probably days and hours, you know, probably weeks and months. They're not bored with it yet, I assume, because a lot of times you get something new and shiny, and, you know, kids will play with it for a few minutes, and then all of a sudden they're bored. I would assume the fun just keeps going. I'd assume they don't get tired.
I think when it's something you can ride, you don't get bored. Mm. You know, when it's a big train, you're not going to get bored because, you know, you can ride it all out in the yard.
Yeah. I could see me just never ending on something like that. I would imagine that would just go on until you've probably grown too big to fit in it anymore.
Yeah, and the the back of it, the cars are actually like a golf cart looking thing.
Really?
Each one is like, yeah, it looks sort of like a golf cart. So that you can put like six people in one of those little cars.
Wow. That holds a lot of people then.
So it would, we could put a lot of people in if we wanted to.
Wow. Man, that sounds amazing.
It is. And usually each child wants a different car. They want to sit by themselves.
Yeah, of course.
So, it's a fun deal. And life should be fun for little kids.
Yes. Yeah.
Life's hard enough without, not having a lot of pleasure.
Yeah. And all these things that you've done, it sounds like you've created an environment where they actually go outside, they play, they use their imagination, they're active, they're doing things that kids should be doing and not just like sitting on the couch on Saturday mornings watching cartoons.
That's right. We're trying to keep them off the cartoons and off the all the other things, all their computers, their iPads. And their phones, they don't need to be on all that.
No.
And nowadays, every 9-year-old has a phone. Did you know that?
No. I had no. Really? 9?
Yeah, I don't even understand it. Mine don't. But one of my grandchildren does have one, and she's always losing it and crying because she knows her mother's going to get her. this is just crazy.
So it's
causing
some stress.
And then I was told the other day, this little boy who's 7 got one for his birthday, and it was a $1,000 phone.
Really?
And I almost flipped out. A $1,000 phone for a 7-year-old?
Wow.
That's going too far.
I feel I can honestly say that when I was 7, I probably wasn't smart enough to operate a cell phone, even if they gave me one.
Yeah, and as complicated as they are nowadays, can you imagine a 7-year-old trying to operate one?
My goodness. Of course, people now, they essentially are born with electronic devices. There's no learning curve. It's just like they're born and they know how to do things.
They know how to do it, don't they?
Yeah. It's like
they can unlock one pretty easy, can't they? We know they can do all that.
Yeah, they can.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
We haven't given out the phone number.
Well, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website is AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
We should probably talk about money at some point this morning.
I think we should. Let's talk about money. Money is a good subject. We have a lot of it flowing in right now. Let me tell you what's happening as far as policies. We've never had this hard a time bidding on policies. It has been tougher than I've ever seen it in all the years, in 20 years. It's never been this tough. We have managed to secure 2 policies.
Really?
And I've got my fingers crossed. I'm waiting on contracts.
Wow. Okay. Because I know last time we talked, you had a couple of bids out.
We've waited, and bids now are taking a long time. Usually it took a week or a week and a half. These owners are stringing us out, trying to get more money. And there's just not any more we can give them, for policies. Anyway, we've managed to secure 2, and I've got 2 more from the same company that he thinks that he'll have for us in 2 weeks. So let's keep our fingers crossed. We've got these 2. As soon as we've got the contracts back, we've sent the contracts out for signatures. As soon as we get them back, we will put them out. Everybody is really wanting their policies right now. They're wanting to get invested. We want them to also. We're just struggling right now of getting policies. It's hard. We're bidding everything. We're bidding everything we see that's worth bidding. But I think we'll have 4 policies.
Well, that's at least some good news. I know that.
That's good news, yes.
It's been a struggle
for a while.
They are
good policies.
I know in the past that we've talked about, things, competition, especially in the first quarter, is difficult. Do you see the, and I know this is a different dynamic, this is not a case of, companies just coming in and trying to, have these massive budgets where they just bid everything in first quarter and then kind of, go off in their own place after that. This is a more of a seller, a policy seller issue, and they're trying to play the field.
It's a policy seller issue. They're being difficult right now. They think their policies are worth a lot more than they are. And, like, they've held us up a week on one policy.
Really?
That the bidding is over, and they can't make up their mind whether they're going to sign the contract and let us have it or going to let somebody else have it. I mean, and they kept saying, well, we think we can get more money. I go, where? Where are you going to get this extra money? You know? So right now, the owners are the ones that are really holding things up. And, you know, we had that fiasco in January with Mr. Ginsburg, and it wasn't his fault that he was that sick. But, you know, we held on for 2 months hoping he was going to get well enough to sign the contract. So that's what put us really behind the eight ball. Then we had missed that opportunity, and so it caused us to miss two other opportunities. We could have closed, and we didn't wait on Mr. Ginsburg. So now we're trying to catch up. We're bidding hard. Competition is stiff because we not only got the providers that have got more money than anybody in the world, but the owners are just not cooperating with us.
Is it where's the holdup? Is it the actual policy owners, or is it like their brokers or people that they may be dealing with?
I think it's the brokers that represent them, make these people believe lots of times that they're going to get more money.
Mm. So they're giving them false expectations right from the get-go.
I think they are, because they're going to lose out, and everybody's going to walk away and saying, you know, it's just too much money. We can't pay you that much. So then they don't sell their policy. You know, we had that happen last year. You know, we had that woman that turned down our bid, and she came back 6 months later. Nobody would buy her policy.
Really?
Yeah. Everybody, you know, she had just messed everybody around so bad.
If it happens enough, do you see that message being received that, you know, hey, this is not, you cannot play this game like this for very long, because you're just going to end up from a situation from you want to sell your policy to trying to, you know, play the field a little bit. And then all of a sudden, in the end, everybody denies it because this is just going on too long. Do you think that message is going to be received that, hey, we need to go back to the way we used to do this? Or?
I don't know. Everybody says it's their market right now.
Wow.
You know, they are controlling the market. And we know there's a lot more policies out there. We're just not getting them right now. As we said, because of the winter and the pandemic, a lot of people just weren't, you know, they just weren't going to the doctor and to the hospital. You know?
Wow. That's amazing. That's it's different when it's you know you're not bidding, you know, in the right, you know, field, or you know you're either too high or too low, and you can make an adjustment on your end. It's got to be really difficult when it's completely out of your hands and there's like literally nothing you can do. It's not like you can bid more because then you still got that threshold. You want to have plenty of profit margin, so you can only go so far. I would imagine that's got to be kind of a frustrating situation.
It is very frustrating. You know, I'm up late at night trying to figure out how to beat the system, how to make it work for us better. You know, how to get the bids when everybody else is trying to get that same bid. In other words, there's not that many policies available, so there is a bunch of people on one policy. That's what the problem is.
Really?
Yes. So I'm hoping it'll get better. I'm hoping that we'll get flooded with policies, which we haven't been so far. But we usually get our share, except right now we're not getting our share. We should have a lot more than what we have. But as I said, we've got two contracts that are out, two policies out for contracts, and we've got two more coming. So I think that we'll have a total of four.
Good.
And it'll relax everybody, and it'll relax me.
Is it?
And we can sit back and relax a little bit then.
Then you're not up all night.
That's right. And the Duval policy is on its way to the bank.
Really?
Yeah. That one should hit the bank any time. And the Duval policy is $966,000.
Oh, wow.
So that one is on its way. I'm looking here. I've got three others that it's been sent to the insurance carrier, so it'll be a couple of weeks. Slater, Wormholt, and Simpson. And that's another $1 million on those three.
Oh, wow. That's pretty sizable.
Yeah. So we've got about $3 million right there coming in. And then we've got the colon policy, and it has went to the carrier now.
Well, good Lord, that's nothing to sneeze at. That's quite a bit.
No, the colon is $5 million. Wow. This gives us another three.
Wow, so $8 million.
$8 million plus what we've already got in the bank ready to go. So we are working day and night to get policies and get everybody fully invested.
Wow.
And we're behind. You know, we've never been this behind on getting policies. But it's just once the Ginsburg deal failed, it put us really behind.
Mm. Wow. So, is it too optimistic? Because you know better than I do. And so is it too optimistic to think, well, geez, as things kind of get back to normal throughout, you know, the next, you know, several months, maybe things will start, you know, shaking up a little bit? Because we've been through some really weird times in the last 12 or 14 months. As we kind of get back to normal, do you think maybe this will kind of like settle down a little bit and we'll get back to?
I think it will. I think maybe in a couple of months, everything will go back to normal, and we'll be getting five or six policies a day. You know, usually every week, you know, we're looking at five to six a week, and right now we're not. So I think it's going to get back to normal, and we'll have a lot of policies, probably more than we can say grace over in a few months.
Good.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll be hoping for things to continue to go back to normal. Whatever
right.
normal is, even if it's a new normal, we'll take it.
It may be a new normal, but anyway, as long as we can get policies for our clients, we'll be okay. It's just that we're really behind right now.
And, you know, and I think the exciting thing is that when people are investing in life insurance policies, it's a much... I want to say that the weight, waiting the strangeness of the market right now, not, I don't mean like the Wall Street market, but like the policy market, the weirdness of it, I think probably is one of those temporary things, because the investment itself is so solid, so secure. It's such a winning type of investment. I would think that having to wait a little bit until this kind of passes is well worth it, especially when we're talking about something so conservative, fast turnarounds policy maturities, getting paid, turning around, reinvesting. I would think the ends justify the means as far as waiting this out.
I think so. I mean, it's solid enough. I think it's worth waiting on. Their money is safe at all times, whether it's in the bank or whether it's in a policy. So they know that, so they don't have to worry. As I said, people have been pouring money into us. I mean, I've never seen as much money coming over every couple of weeks. A lot more than usual. So, you know, they've got confidence in us. They've got confidence in how it works. You know, our customers are telling them how much they've made, how it's working. So they know that over time this will work every time.
Is this a good time for people to come in? Because I know you said that you've had a lot of people come in recently as new investors. People have put a lot of money with you into it, not a couple hundred thousand here and
yeah.
there. But we were talking about, you know, some really, really substantial, initial investment money coming in, setting up accounts, things like that. Is this still a good time for people to start like that? Or
I think it is. I think it's a good time. They can get started now. Because, you know, people are uncertain about the market right now. It is up, but they don't know if it's going to last. They don't know if it's going to fall flat. And people are worried enough, they're getting their money out of the stock market. They're cashing in and bringing it to us. And I've never seen them bringing this much money as they have lately. So it's telling me what the people are feeling.
So it really is a sense of, hey, you know, even as uncertainty or as uncertain as things are right now, there are more conservative investments like a life settlement. And so people are reacting to what may be either a gut feeling, or maybe they're just, you know, they see what may be coming down the road. There could be a number of reasons. But when in the end, the big difference between a life settlement and a traditional investment, you know, in the stock market, is that no matter what does happen, so if, say, in a month or two or 6 months, something, an event happens on Wall Street, the investment of the life insurance policy stays steady, it stays strong, and it holds its value. Is that the
That's
big difference?
That's exactly right. The value never goes down. It's always the same. Whatever your contract called for, that's what you're going to get paid.
And no matter what happens anywhere, if the stock market, if the bottom falls out, it doesn't affect a life insurance policy at all, right?
No, it'll stay the same. It doesn't matter what happens in the world, in politics, in war, all these areas across the world. It doesn't matter. A life insurance policy, whatever the face amount is what it stays at. It never goes, it doesn't decrease, ever.
For people who are already, who have been with you for a long time, do they understand the situation right now with, you know, how, you know, the whole thing is playing out with bids and policies for sale and things like, do they understand that as far as what's going
yes,
on?
Yes, they do understand it, but I've had a lot of people in the last week send me an email, when do you think we'll be in a policy? So they're getting ready. They're wanting to know when can we get in a policy.
Mm.
And I've told them all, it won't be very long now. We're getting contracts. Even after we get a contract, it'll still take a little bit to close those policies.
Yeah. But there is some good news on the horizon, though, and that's what's really kind of, I guess maybe the takeaway so far is that things are happening.
That's right. The good news is we do have contracts. That's the important part.
Yeah.
We have two contracts that are out for signing, and then we've got two more behind that. So it looks like we're going to have four policies altogether.
Cool. Cool. And then as far as bidding goes, what does it look like, you know, coming up as far as, you know, new policy availability? And you may not even know. I mean, that might not even be something that you can even predict, but
I can't predict it exactly right now. I know that I've got a couple or three coming for us to bid on. Past that, I don't know how many bids we're going to have.
Okay.
We'll just have to see how it plays out.
All right. This is kind of one of those things that it just kind of depends on availability. Because I know in the past there's been really no issue about availability. It's not like you're just going to run out of policy. So all these people that have been, I guess, holding on to their policy, I guess at some point trying to, you know, hold out for more money, at some point they're going to turn around, I would think anyway. I don't have the historical data to back it up. It's just my initial, you know, thinking. At some point, they're going to say, okay, let's just go ahead and sell it. Let's stop asking for too much. It's crazy. Nobody's going to pay it. We realize that now. Let's just go back and you know, accept bids for what they should be.
Yeah, I hope they do that. one of the guys that we've been trying to buy his policy for a month, and I don't understand it. He now, his premium is $100,000 and it's past due.
Really?
His premium is past due. I would not be sitting on my backside. You know, I would be getting up and saying, you know, I believe I'm going to wait too long. I'm going to lose the policy.
Wow.
I just don't know who's advising him other than the brokers. The brokers can cause people to really do stupid things. The brokers are in it for themselves. They're not in it for the client. I don't believe that. I used to, but I don't, because they tell people, you can get a lot more money, you can do this. And the other day, one of the guys that we're buying a policy from, he finally told the broker, you're not getting any more money, you're not getting anything. He said, now close the policy.
Wow. So he had to get a little forceful.
He got tough with the broker. He was mad as you know what. And he finally just said that to him. And he sent me a copy of the email. So I know exactly what he told that broker. You know?
So people
yeah,
are catching
he
on.
He was tired of dealing with it. Because we were already, we had this thing sliced so thin it was ridiculous.
Wow.
But we did it to get the policies for the people. So he was mad. He just finally told him, you know, you're not getting any more money. You're not getting anything now. Close it. So I can tell you what's going on. I mean, people are frustrated, and they're reminding them. I've got another guy, another provider we've been dealing with for 7 years. He told his broker yesterday, he said, you know, I've been dealing with Fay and them for 7 years. Now, they really need this policy, you know. He's trying to tell him to give it to us rather than the other people because they don't really need it. They're just doing it, you know, just to add to their collection.
Yeah. It's like a scorecard for them, and that's it.
That's all it is with them. It's a scorecard.
Man, I love when you tell stories like that. That's pretty exciting. All right. So bottom line is if people are thinking, man, this is just, you know, the well has dried up. It's not. It's there's things that are going on.
It
you're still getting
down pretty bad, but things are working.
Yeah, yeah, and things are starting to turn around a little bit. I think is what it sounds like.
Yeah, it is turning around. I'm telling you, I would know if it wasn't because I've been waiting and waiting, and you know we lost a couple of them, and that really set us back.
Yeah.
They just bid it till it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so now we've got two coming. That we're waiting on contracts, and then we got a couple behind that. So I know of four that we're going to get.
Good deal. Good deal. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And AmericanFinancialMidland.com is the website.
And we should probably focus on the website for just a second before we get into trivia, because people do go there to the site. You do keep it updated. It's not like you just put up this website and then just walked away. All the content up there is absolutely updated all the time, so people can go and see, you know, real money that people are making. They can actually read testimonials. They can see about other people's past experiences with the investment, with a life settlement, things like that. So there's a lot of really great information up there, and you do update it on a regular basis. We should make note of that as well. So every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia. What is our topic this morning?
We're going to talk about Brazoria County.
Ooh.
There is a museum there, a railroad museum. And everybody needs to go and see it. There's things there that will just amaze you. Most people do not know that women played a big role in the railroads in the 1800s to 1950. Would you believe that?
No.
Okay. Back then, of course, you know, women couldn't get jobs hardly at anything. So what happened is they went to work for the railroads, there was a shortage. And they taught the women to be telegraphers. They taught them to be clerks. They taught them all this. And so the women came to the railroads. They were very important in America. They were doing things while the men were off to war. And that started in 1870. As I said, people don't know what all it took to run a railroad. Back then you had to have engineers and coalers and firemen, porters and ticket agents, conductors, station managers. And here in Texas, they were rolling rice and cotton on their little railroad. That's what they had. They had cotton, they had rice, which, you know, we don't have a lot of passenger trains even today in Texas.
Yeah.
Our passenger trains here in Texas, you can go to Chicago every day at 5 o'clock.
Really?
Yeah, I've been on that train. I've went to Chicago. We've got one every day that goes to New Orleans. And then the one that I took out to Phoenix leaves here in the morning, and it goes all through West Texas. It goes by Big Bend. It goes through El Paso. Oh, and when it gets to San Antonio, it's there usually 4 hours. They have a changing of trains there. The train's coming from California pass by and this other train that's going out to California. And they have observation cars. They have a dining car, white tablecloth, the whole deal. So it's an old way to travel, but it's a fun way. I had a sleeping car the last time I did. I read in the observation car. It was wonderful. And then, you go and have your lunch, have your dinner. And it's a wonderful experience. People should try this. But anyway, about the women. So the women were taking all these jobs and learning all this, but they had a problem. The women's dresses were getting caught in the railroads. They were dangerous. And there was a lady named Amelia Bloomer. And she is the one that saved women on the railroad because she said those huge Victorian dresses were deadly.
Mm.
They were in the way. They were causing people to get hurt and to get maimed. They would catch a wagon wheel, would catch them on fire. So she inspired trousers, Bloomer trousers.
Really?
It bears her name to this day.
That's where that came from?
That's where it came from.
Wow.
Amelia Bloomer. And so she saved the women that were working on the railroads from getting killed and maimed by her invention.
Wow.
And, of course, sometimes the jobs were just temporary. And after World War II, when the men came back, a lot of the women gave the job over to their husband, taught them how to be telegraphers and different things because there just wasn't enough work for a man and a woman. But what amazed me was, during that time, women could not cash their checks at a bank.
Really?
The banks did not think that they'd really been paid that big an amount of money.
Oh,
can you
no.
believe that?
Wow.
So they would have to go to a saloon to cash their checks. I mean, it's crazy.
No, honestly, I can think of worse places to go to cash your check, to be honest.
So then the main subject here today is the first lady doctor was on a railroad. First, most remarkable woman. She was in Brazoria County. And everybody really talks about her. She came from Vienna. She went to medical school there. She completed it in New York City. And then her husband was also a doctor. And they came out to Texas. Can you imagine?
Awesome.
She came out to Texas, went to work for the railroad as a doctor.
That's so cool.
First woman doctor on a railroad in the state. And anywhere else. She had 15 children altogether.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
Seven of them survived. But she set up shop as an OBGYN and a general practitioner. And then she, as I said, she went to work for the railroad. So she developed a new method of removing slugs from all these gunshot wounds.
Really?
Yeah, she didn't like probing in their chest. She said if she probed it all, she only used a sterile finger. But here's what she would do. She would position the patient so that gravity would bring the bullet to her.
You're kidding me.
She would hang the patient a couple of inches above the bed. And she reported that the bullet would come to her within 24 hours.
Really? Is that true?
Yeah, this is a true story. And every one of her first 17 patients were up by the 12th day, ready to shoot or to be shot at.
You got to be kidding me. That is such a turnaround from the way things used to be.
Can you imagine? And we never saw that in the movies, and this is what she was doing. And she kept all the slugs. She eventually had around 24. She made them into a necklace and wore it to her grave.
Wow, that's neat.
But they hired her in 1904 to work for the railroad.
I mean, just to have that kind of a perspective and, the vision of being just a small thing like that could make such a big difference. That's really, I mean, that's amazing. And to have people actually, recover better, when recovery rates go up like that, people, what'd you say, within 12, within, within no time, people
were
back up, doing like normal things. I mean, that's crazy.
And they said she was the first woman to ever work for a major railroad.
That's amazing.
And they said railroad medicine was grisly because they had all these crushings and lost limbs and bad things was happening. And in her office, now this is hilarious, her office was decorated with rattlesnake skins, antlers, trophy heads, and a stuffed 13-foot alligator.
Oh, my God, really?
Now, can you imagine down there in Brazoria, this woman had to have been really an astonishment to people. Can you imagine?
Wow.
And she wore those bloomers, to say the least.
That's amazing. You know, you think as, I guess you would, I don't want to categorize anything, but you would think that, you know, especially back then in the early days of the railroad, that it was predominantly men who worked in it. And I know some women did work in it, but to have a mostly male run industry, and then we need women to come in and fix it for us.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. And I've seen a picture of this lady, a picture from 1913 of her. And she wore a hat, a man's hat, and had it decorated.
Wow. Very cool.
I mean, she was a cool lady. I mean, to come out west and be a doctor right here in Texas, I think is pretty amazing. And as I said, she was from Vienna, Austria.
How neat. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like, you know, one person. This is the kind of thing that is so inspiring. It's like it could take literally one person that you wouldn't necessarily think could change an entire industry. And really, it sounds like she has or did.
I think she did, too, because in 1904, I mean, I'm surprised they even let her practice medicine. You know how crazy people were.
Yeah. Yeah, really. And then for her to have the breakthroughs that she did. I mean, that's amazing. It's such a big deal.
Yeah, and back then, the railroad, that little bitty railroad, was just hauling sugar cane and cotton, and they still had all those accidents.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And today, of course, it's just rice and petroleum running through that. But we don't have a lot of trains here. And, you know, it's just amazing to me that the bloomers was started because of the railroad accidents these ladies were having, you know, working for the railroad. And then a first doctor out here working for a railroad is an amazing thing to me.
It really is. It really is. And it's you know, some of the greatest inventions always come from solving some kind of a problem. And it sounds like that's exactly
right.
What she did.
And she did. And she did a lot of things in medicine nobody else was doing. To get bullets out. I mean, you know,
yeah.
She just had them up above the bed and upside down, and she said those bullets just came to her.
Can you actually sleep on a train when it's like, it seems like it would be pretty rocky?
It is rocky, but it just rocks you to sleep.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I did not have any trouble sleeping on the train.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because I'm just trying to picture, and I've never tried to sleep on a train before.
Yeah.
But it seems like with all that, you know, the moving and the rattling and the rocking back and forth, it seems like it would be enough to just, you know, keep you up all night, but it doesn't.
Well, it goes pretty slow. It has to because they're so long. Mm. When you're going through all the way through West Texas going out toward El Paso, there's places where it's going pretty slow. And then on the good tracks, when it speeds up, it's going about 60 miles an hour all the time.
On the good tracks?
On the good tracks. I'm talking about the straightaways. When you're going toward Arizona and all that, it's just miles and miles of flat land.
Really?
And there's not all the crooks that you have. In Texas, it winds. I'll just tell you, it winds a lot. So there's lots and lots of time that it's just slowly going around those curves and those little towns. There's a million little towns in Texas the train goes through going to California and to Arizona.
It sounds like it's probably, I mean, if you need to get someplace fast to train, it's probably not the right thing. But if you want to just sit back and relax and enjoy the scenery, yeah, would that be right? That'd be a good...
I think so. If you've got the time and you've got a couple of days out, a couple of days back, I think it's a great trip because it takes you back in time. I mean, how many people get to sit and read or just look at the scenery? A lot of scenery between here and Phoenix and Scottsdale.
I would imagine it's stunning.
I think it is. There's lots of things to see. All the little towns, I loved all that. All the little bridges you cross. I mean, it's really interesting.
Yeah, you see things, because a lot of times, you know, it's, I think, and I might be looking at this the wrong way. I'm not educated on this, but it seems to me like just, you know, from the outside looking in, a lot of times these trains, obviously they'll go through towns and they'll go, you know, near roads and things like that. But it seems like there would be a lot of open space that trains go that, you know, highways don't go through. So you see different things.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember when we went to Chicago. Takes a day and a half to get to Chicago.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, I remember we left here at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and we were there, I think, at 12:30 or 1.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Neat.
So if you're not in a hurry, you know, you can just go across country at your leisure.
We should probably all be in less of a hurry. We should probably slow down and take things in a little bit more.
Yeah, because it's not going to change your life that much. I always tell people, don't worry about it unless it's going to change your life.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's going to change your life, jump on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. How neat. Great information. It really kind of gives you a whole new perspective on not only the train industry, but, you know, on medical fields and, you know, people's contributions. I know that women, you know, they say a lot of times that women, you know, you are behind the scenes sometimes, not quite as celebrated as maybe they should be, you know, in industries like NASA and now trains. So there's all kinds of things where women have played roles, but they've just haven't gotten the recognition.
Nobody ever talked about it, and I did not know that all these women were working for the trains in the 1900s. I had no idea.
Yeah, exactly. Me neither. Not a clue at all. But that's pretty
cool.
And
it seems like they were important until 1950. And then I think it just kind of faded out.
Until 1950. What happened in 1950?
They probably got a lot more sophisticated and said, oh, we don't need you. I figured that's what happened.
Sophistication stepped in.
Sophistication stepped in and said, oh, we can do without you. Well, I do know this, that they don't employ, after the 50s and 60s, they didn't employ near as many people on the railroads because they didn't need that many to run one.
Mm. Yeah, they became more efficient.
I think they became a lot more efficient.
Wow.
But the railroad always paid more than anybody else. I've always wondered about that. You know, people that retire from the railroad have a great pension. We've had people come to us and put their money with us, and they'd been engineers on the railroad.
Really?
And at the end of their time, they were worth $1 million.
Really?
Yes.
Well, clearly I'm in the wrong business.
That's right. become an engineer on a railroad. My gosh, there's money in that.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, they do make very good money.
Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And our website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
Talk for just a second about the life settlement option as a whole. If people are, you know, looking to make a change, if they're saying, you know, hey, you know, all these things that you've been talking about this morning, you know, the stock market uncertainty, you know, we're not really sure what's happening. We're looking for other solutions. If people are in that situation, what should they do? How does the process work? What should they bring over? What should they expect? What is the life settlement all about?
First of all, as you know, they've got to be accredited. So they've got to either make $200,000 a year or they have to be worth $1 million without their home. So once we've established that, they can come over. They can bring either a copy of their portfolio or something to show their net worth or a pay stub to show that they make $200,000 a year. So that's the first thing. And then we need to decide how much they're going to put with us. if it's what kind of accounts they're going to have, if it's a Roth IRA, a regular IRA, or a custodial account with their wife, and then who's going to inherit. So, you know, we have to go through all that and figure that out.
Well, we don't talk about that very much, the inheritance.
No, we don't. And we have to know all that. You cannot do anything without a beneficiary. Someone one time said, well, I don't want to establish one right now. I said, you can't do it without it. If something happened to you tomorrow and you've just signed up, you have to have a beneficiary in order to do this.
Wow.
It's for your own protection and your family's protection.
Because, you know, and that makes sense, because we talk all the time about how everything is already mapped out and everything is, you know, if this happens, here's what goes on. When the policy matures, here's where the money goes, you know, and so it's all very well mapped out in advance. I guess I never really thought about, you know, what if something happens, where is this going to go? Neat.
That's right. So you have to be prepared.
All right. And what should people plan to start with? I know things can vary and, you know, people are in different places, but what would be a good starting point? As far as like how much people invest, what should they plan on bringing over?
Well, they need to bring enough money to do some good. If most people right now are bringing $300,000 to $400,000 over.
Okay. All right. That's a good starting point.
Some of them a million. They can start with $100,000.
Okay.
But most people don't. They put quite a bit more in, especially right now. I had a client call yesterday. He just put in money a month ago. He said, I'm bringing another $200,000.
Mm.
So right now, money's coming in very heavily. People are making a lot of changes right now, which is shocking. We have a tremendous amount of new money that we have to get invested in addition to the other money. So that's why I'm working day and night right now to get that done. So when people come to us, they need to have enough money for several policies, okay? Not just two. They need six policies.
So it's important to be diversified.
It is. You've got to be diversified. Don't put your hopes all in one policy. We're not going to let you do that.
No, that's not a plan. That's not
no.
The goal is.
And then some people, we recommend it $50,000 a policy, and some people put $90,000. If it's my certain group, I have one group that has a tremendous amount of money, and I will let them lots of times do $150,000, but that's not for everybody. That's just for the ones that have a extra amount, okay?
They're in special circumstances.
Yeah, their circumstances are different than everybody else's. So most of the time it's 90 to 50,000.
Okay. All right, that gives people kind of an idea of a good average, you know, place to start, where to go. Oh, we should probably go over the risks before we wrap up, because
okay,
there are three big ones that people do need to know about.
There is three risks. The most important risk of all your portfolio is it can go over. Be prepared. If it goes over, you have to pay premiums. Not a lot of them go over, but we've probably got 10% that are over, and the premiums have to be paid. Most of them, the premiums are low. We have a couple of them that are not low, that their premiums are high, but we try not to let that happen. And these are policies from several years ago. But ours nowadays, we do not take anything with high premiums. We just won't do it. So they need to know that. That is the risk. It could go over. The second risk is this is not liquid until the policy matures, okay? So you're not going to get any cash out of there until we say, okay, the policy has matured and it's in your bank account. The third thing is if a life insurance company ever went out. It would take you longer to get your money. But we've never had one go out in Texas, and in the United States we haven't had one go in years. Everybody buys life insurance policy and the company. Right now there's three companies that are for sale, and Hartford turned down $23 billion.
Jeez.
So I'm telling you, these are huge companies.
Wow.
And so they have reserves to cover every policy you've got, okay?
All right. I know we covered a lot of information. It's just kind of a general broad overview. People really need to come in. They can ask questions. You can go over the process again with people, figure out the right strategy to get them on, to get them where they need to be, to grow their money, grow their wealth, things like that. But the first step is to call and make an appointment. So one last time, Faye, what is your number for people to call?
Okay. It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And the website, AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby, sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.